The Free For All Roundtable.
Round two.
As mentioned on panel, Rob Davis, former city councilor, founder of Rob Davis and Associates, and lucky to be zipped today, apparently.
Well, I just want to send a shout out to the person who mouthed the words, "Your fly is down," discreetly, so that nobody would know that my fly was down from Royal York Station to Osgoode Station today. So that's why I'm mentioning it on the radio.
One of many exciting moments on the TTC today. Yep. Bob Reed is here, principal at BroadwayStrategy.com, the guy behind Touchdowns and Fumbles, which you can hear on Jerry Agar's show on Fridays, and Sabrina Nanji with Queen's Park Observer. And Sabrina, credit to you for having flagged the fact that this morning we're going to learn officially at 9 o'clock that speed limits are going up on some Ontario freeways. And the interesting thing is you hinted at that. We called the ministry and the ministry lifted the embargo.
Yeah, I had kind of heard some high-level details about it, and that's what you read in the newsletter. And then I saw some other reporters came out with it. But the general rule of thumb, I guess, in the press gallery is if you're not the first one to break the embargo, you're fine. So I think we might be okay. But yeah, you're right. You know, we're moments away from the official word from Transportation Minister Pravin Sekharia. He's going to be up in Hamilton to essentially make the speed limit 110 kilometers on certain stretches of highway. That's going to include the 401 and the 403. This is something that Ford government has been doing piecemeal over the last couple of years. They had a couple of pilots they've made permanent. And I guess the idea is that they've, you know, after they've done the work and looked at other jurisdictions, they believe it's safer to go a little faster on the highways. Don't expect anything to come in the GTA. I can't really imagine going over 40 kilometers on any highway in and around Toronto, let alone 110. But yeah, this is going to happen in the summer.
And also in Queen's Park Observer today, apparently jambalaya is on the menu in the restaurant. Rob Davis, some people may protest this, but you know, I opened the lines and everybody was like, who cares?
Yeah, I don't know what they have against jambalaya, but we should talk about the highway thing. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that Cajun cuisine. There used to be a really cool place called Southern Accent that I used to frequent. But oh, sorry.
Speed limits.
I got distracted. So listen, that's what happens when you're on a diet. You know what? It's kind of interesting to me because when you look at the science of driving on highways, the wider the road, the faster you are inclined to drive. And I think people naturally understand what their limits are. They drive faster on a wider road, which is why in the city of Toronto and other places, they actually, as a way of reducing speeds and making things a little safer, they narrow roads. They put bike lanes in, they put chicanes,
right.
They put curbstones, bollards, and what have you. And so this seems to be, you know, going in the opposite direction. And so it's kind of interesting to me that the provincial government wants you to go a little faster, the municipal governments want you to go a little slower. And I guess we're going to make up all that time we lose in residential streets when we're on the 401.
And Bob Reed, as has been noted by many, you're lucky if you can get over 100 in the first place on an average day, so speed limit may be irrelevant.
Yeah, bring it on if we could actually go that fast, at least through the GTA on the highways. The 100 kilometer an hour limit has been a figment, I think, for as long as it's been around. I mean, nobody drives at 100K when the highways open, when traffic is flowing. 120 is the standard everywhere. That's just the way it's been. That is the natural speed of traffic flow. So I'm just hoping that once the signs get changed, the people don't say, okay, well, if 100 meant 120, now 110 means $1.30, 140, no problem, because then we're looking at trouble.
Let's talk about plastics, and we played some audio from a video that was made by a conservative MP mostly about straws, but also complaining about wooden utensils and stuff like that. Bob Reed, I'll come to you on this one. I realize there is this sort of knee-jerk reaction whenever a Liberal government decides that certain things should be eliminated or limited, but I just, you know, why are the conservatives betting on plastic straws?
Because it's another way to tap into things that bug people, and that's worked very well for them on numerous other files. And this does bug a lot of people. I like seeing alternatives to plastics. I like seeing the compostable food packaging that's taken places have moved to. I'm fine with all that. I don't mind a wooden spoon instead of a plastic one. The straw thing, okay, I can see where that might bug you. I don't really use straws anyway, so not an issue. But no, to your point, John, this is really the conservatives seizing on another thing that bugs people that they can say, well, thank you, Judge Trudeau, it's all his fault.
Sabrina, I often reflect on the idea that the level of waste in the society we have right now, 50 years from now, people will hate us for it because, you know, the polluted waterways and the polluted skies and all of that stuff. So, you know, staking out plastic straws, which will probably be banned again in 10 years if they lift the ban, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to Bob's point, you know, conservatives have been really good at tapping into the anger that a lot of people are feeling now. And, you know, plastic straws, or I guess a lack of plastic straws, is one of those things. And they are annoying. I mean, no matter how much you care about the climate and Mother Earth, I think they are, they do tick people off. And to Bob's point about this being, you know, very political, I mean, when you click on the link to this petition to go sign it, it's it asks you for your email, your cell phone number, and your postal code. And that is crucial information for political operatives, right, who want to make sure their supporters know what they're up to and are going to get out to vote for them when the time comes. So I do think this is all political and something that's maybe an easy thing to tap into. But I just want to add also a tip for anyone like me who's annoyed with these paper straws. If you don't want them to disintegrate and get all soggy, you just take them out when you're not sipping and just like rest it on your cup. And then when you go for a sip, you dip it in again and it'll last longer. That's how I get by.
But that's exhausting. Rob Davis, you have run political campaigns, so you understand what Sabrina was saying there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the conservatives, the federal conservatives, have been geniuses at creating issues that make people mad and then asking you to sign up and assembling a mailing list.
I will disagree with you. What they're good at doing is creating campaigns around the things that people are already mad about.
Right.
I think it's a minor annoyance, but it's an annoyance nonetheless. And it's one that affects everybody who actually likes to drink liquids, which is everybody. And so if you really look at the science, and this is where I'm really concerned, like forget the politics of it for a moment. You know, what is the research that says that you don't get the same amount of chemicals migrating or leaching out of your paper straw as you would out of your plastic straw? I think that it's great that we want to reduce the amount of things that end up in the oceans, because as a scuba diver, I've seen, you know, fish mangled by, you know, the rip, you know, what are they called? Six-pack.
The collar thing.
Collar tops and all of that. But we also want to make sure that we're not, you know, jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire. And so, you know, I like the idea of an option. I don't think this is necessarily a straw man sort of political positioning, but it's smart. They're collecting data. They're tapping into people who are angry. And far be it for politicians to not be political, right? Like, that's okay. That's their job. It's what they should do.
A shortage of teachers has led to some high school students getting perfect grades, 100% in their midterms, because they simply haven't been taught. And Rob Davis, I'll come back to you on this. Somebody was pointing out, you really think a university is going to look at that report card and say 100%, you're good.
Yeah, they're doing a disservice to the students by granting them 100%. I could see them trying to create a circumstance where those kids get to be taught and they get to be tested and they get to be marked and graded according to what they really know. I mean, this is a problem that's kind of bedeviling education across the province of Ontario. I remember a time, and because I'm now reaching that golden age, where there were too many teachers, where teachers couldn't get on. They couldn't get hired. You knew people who were LTO, long-term occasional. They were supply teachers for years and years and years. And not too long ago, I met a teacher who said, I went to teacher's college, I graduated, I did a practicum, and I got hired by a board in like 7-8 months after graduating from teacher's college. That's the norm. So, hey kids, if you want a great career with great pension and summers off, go to teacher's college. You're needed.
Sabrina, is there a sense of urgency in the education department and with the minister? Because it's outrageous what's going on here. There are kids who are not being taught.
Yeah, and I think eventually there's going to be more needed to address the teacher shortage, right? Because we have been hearing stories about what's going on in the classroom. I do think these students might be, you know, celebrating in the moment. I got a perfect score. But obviously, in the long run, this is not going to help them. And so I do think that this is just going to help the teachers' unions in particular when they're going to the education minister and saying, look, you need to do more for recruitment and retention. attention because our classrooms are falling short on so many in so many ways.
And Bob Reed, we've been talking about this issue for a while. I mean, for example, Robert Turner, who everybody knows, his son has had this endless series of teachers this year because they can't find a permanent teacher. And there are a lot of things in play here, one of them being that there's a cap on the number of days that a retired teacher can work.
Yeah, and Bert's son and the other kids who get caught up in this shouldn't have to suffer for it. They shouldn't be punished in terms of the mark they get. But who's the genius who said let's give everybody perfect scores? Why is it not an average, slightly above average pass mark? If the idea is to protect them from negative repercussions of the teacher situation and the inability to properly perform in the classroom, that's fine. But why 100%? Why a perfect score that's going to skew averages and everything else? It's just wrong.
Let me stick with you for a second, Bob, because I imagine this could feature, and maybe I'm asking you to, shoot the whole load right now, but on touchdowns and fumbles, Toronto's police chief has walked back his remarks about the Zamir verdict. I think the case is largely closed. I'd still like to chat with him the next time he's in studio, but I think it was the right strategy to put this behind him.
The best strategy would not have been to make the comment that he made immediately after the verdict came down, which, as the former head of the Criminal Lawyers Association said, basically translated to we don't have confidence in the system because the verdict that we got, not the one wanted, even though the one we wanted was at odds with the evidence. So it was a highly, highly problematic statement on the part of the police chief. For him for walking it back and being emphatic in his support for the system and his endorsement of the verdict, but it was a self-inflicted error that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, Rob Davis, it was pretty bush, and especially I would have expected better because I have a great deal of regard for this particular chief. He's good at his job, I think.
Yeah, look, Chief Demkew's an exceptional chief. He's been an exceptional officer his entire career. I think we forget one thing about police officers and police chiefs in particular. They're human beings and they're emotional. And I think the verdict was an emotional time for anybody wearing a uniform. What a terrible, terrible tragedy. What a terrible confluence of events that would result in the death of a police officer, a man who's out for an evening with his family being charged with first-degree murder as if this was something that he had planned, on his night out with his family and his pregnant wife. I think emotions run high. I think Torontonians are forgiving. The real challenge, of course, is because he's an officer of the court. He has to be respectful of the decisions in the system, and particularly that one aspect of the legal jurisprudence where you're innocent until proven guilty, and you're not guilty if you're proven innocent. And I think that's really, really important.
Thank you all. Good to have you on the panel today. Sabrina and Angie, Bob Reed, and Rob Davis.
Catch the Roundtable, round one at 7:45, round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.